Good morning. I'm sure you got one, but if not, I would encourage you to pick up this sheet in the back. It has the graphic on the one. Well, this one doesn't. But anyway, there's a sheet for you to pick up that we're going to deal with this morning. Our Sunday school theme continues to be Dare to Believe Daniel. Dare to Believe Daniel. We're going to look again at chapter 2, Daniel chapter 2, even though this morning in the worship service we'll be moving on to chapter 3. I have something in common with Major League Baseball players. Occasionally we all strike out. When I got done Sunday morning, I felt like I struck out because I was not clear enough. So we're going to clarify a little bit this morning of this vision, that this dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, and why we believe that it proves that Daniel was a prophet in around 600 BC. If you look at Daniel chapter 2, verse 45, Daniel 2:45. Let's pray. Lord, give us wisdom this morning. We thank you that you have provided us your inerrant, inspired word, that you are the God in heaven who has revealed to mankind what we could not know on our own. In Daniel 2, this is demonstrated through prophecy. This morning, it's demonstrated by us looking back at that prophecy. So we just thank you for the privilege of studying your word this morning. Amen. All right, Daniel 2:45 says, "Inasmuch as you saw that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold." Now here's my theme. The great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future. What will take place in the future. So the dream is true and its interpretation is trustworthy. All right, so my theme this morning is what will take place in the future. That this dream that he had is true, and its interpretation, and this is the key here, trustworthy. Okay, now as we've been talking about as far as Daniel and higher criticism and liberal critics and those who would disbelieve, the issue is they would say, well, Daniel's not trustworthy. He didn't really write in the 600 BC era. He didn't really live during the Babylonian Empire. This was written later, okay? The only way that somebody could know these things is if he was writing after the fact, okay? Now, we dealt with that last 2 weeks, why we don't believe it was after the fact, why we do believe that Daniel wrote at the time that we believe that he wrote, at the time that he says he wrote. And what is ironic is, the reason that higher criticism wants to doubt the trustworthiness of Daniel is this dream. Because they will acknowledge, now here's my point, they will acknowledge that these four kingdoms that Daniel talks about are the four kingdoms that we would also say prove the validity of his prophecy. Okay, but they would say, no, it's clearly he's talking about those four kingdoms, therefore it could not be prophecy. It has to be written afterwards. So we agree on one thing. We agree that this statue clearly represents history. This statue clearly represents four world powers. Okay, so liberals and conservatives, when it comes to theology, agree on that, that those are the four kingdoms that are being dealt with here. What we disagree about is, of course, we say it's prophecy, they say it's forgery. Okay, so we're going to look at Daniel's dream, or Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and the statue. And, of course, this is on the back of your page also. All right, so I'm going to do a better job, hopefully, this morning of putting the dream and the interpretation together. All right, so on your sheet, we read in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, verse 32, all right? The head of that statue was made of fine gold, its breast and its arms of silver, its belly and its thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly iron and partly clay. I want you to notice the first part of verse 32. The head of that statue was made of fine gold. So there's the dream. In verse 38, you find Daniel's interpretation. Okay. And wherever the sons of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, or the birds of the sky, he has given them all into your hand, Nebuchadnezzar, and has caused you to rule over them all. Which we saw last week that Jeremiah had prophesied beforehand. Okay. But here's my point. So here's the interpretation. You are the head of gold. So in this dream, this statue whose head is made of gold is clearly Babylon. All right. Again, Babylon, the heyday was 605 to 539 BC. So 600 years before Jesus is the Babylonian Empire. Now, that in itself is, okay, you know, Daniel lived in the Babylonian Empire, so it's not a prophecy at this point to say, well, the gold represents Babylon, because he was an exile in Babylon. It's from that point on that it becomes controversial. Okay. So you go back to verse 32, and you look at Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and it's the second part says, its breast and its arms of silver, okay, or its chest and its arms were made of silver. So that is in his dream. This is in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, which, again, we could safely say was around 600 years before Christ. Okay. Here's Daniel's interpretation, verse 39. After you will arise another kingdom inferior to you. Okay, so after you will arise another kingdom inferior to you. Now, if you'll keep your hand here and go to Daniel 5:30, the same night Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, which is Babylonian, was slain. So Darius the Mede received the kingdom at about the age of 62. So the Medes and the Persians are next. Now let me show you that. Daniel 8:20. Daniel chapter 8, he has his own vision, okay, that follows this statue. Verse 20. So follow me. So Daniel's writing in around 600 years before Jesus. He says, well, Babylon is the head of gold. Okay. That's no big deal. Of course, that's what it represented. But now he gives us what the next part represents. The ram which you saw has two horns, the kings of Media and Persia. So when you go back to Daniel chapter 2, verse 32, where it says, its breast and arms of silver, that represents the Medes and the Persians. Okay? So the two arms represents, apparently, the Medes and the Persians. Now, we mostly call it the Persian Empire. But as we saw in chapter 5, the immediate effect on Babylon was through Darius the Mede, okay? So the Persian Empire was 539 BC to 331 BC, or before Christ. So in the interpretation, okay, in verse 39, after you will rise another kingdom inferior to you. So Daniel tells us later that that's the Persian Empire. That's the Medes and the Persians. Now, at this point, again, Daniel lived long enough to see the downfall of the Babylonian Empire and the rise of the Persian Empire. So at this point, we're still not talking about, I mean, it's still prophecy because he said it before it happened. Okay, so he tells Nebuchadnezzar, there's going to come another kingdom after you. It won't be as strong as you. It won't be made of gold. It'll be made of silver. And it'll be two branches, two arms, and it's the Medes and the Persians. It won't be quite like your kingdom, but it is the next kingdom. Now, again, Daniel lived long enough to see that. So, you know, if he's writing it after the fact, then we could say, well, he did prophesy it, but he also saw it come to pass. Okay? Now, again, the critics will agree that, yes, Daniel's clearly talking about Babylon, that he's clearly talking about Persia. Okay. But he lived long enough to see Persia. But this is where now we start to part ways, okay? Nebuchadnezzar's dream, verse 32, says, its belly and its thighs of bronze. Its belly and its thighs of bronze. So, looking at the statue, you got the head of gold, the chest of silver with the two arms of silver. Next comes the belly and the thighs, okay? And it's made of bronze, or King James, I think, says brass, but bronze is probably the better understanding of it. You look at verse 39. I'm sorry, verse 39. So after you will rise another kingdom inferior to you, that's Persia. Then the third kingdom of bronze, which will rule over the earth. So he's making a contrast here between this next empire after Babylon is inferior to Babylon, but the one after that will rule the entire world, okay? The third kingdom of bronze will rule over all the earth. Well, go to Daniel 8. In his vision of the future that coincides with Nebuchadnezzar's dream, we find that in verse 21, Daniel 8:21, the shaggy goat represents the kingdom of Greece. And the large horn that is between his eyes is the first king. The broken horn and the four horns that arose in its place represent four kingdoms which will arise from his nation, although not of his power. Okay, this third kingdom is Greece. Greece came to power, you know, we're talking about now, what, almost 300 years after Daniel. Okay? But he says, there will be a third kingdom. It'll be made of bronze, but it'll rule the earth. It'll be much more powerful than Persia was, and even more powerful than Babylon was. And it's Greece. He tells us it's Greece. And of course, this great king, this great horn, is Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great's army used bronze helmets and breastplates and shields and swords. Josephus, the Roman/Jewish historian in the first century, okay, so Josephus, writing in the first century, wrote, among other things, a book called The History of the Jews. The History of the Jews. In Josephus' History of the Jews, he records how the priest of Israel brought out the scroll of the prophet Daniel and showed it to Alexander the Great, telling him that he was the fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy. That's in Book 11, page 345. So in the first century, the Jewish priests were able to show Alexander the Great that Daniel, who at this point lived 300 years ago, right? That's who he was talking about. And then we know Alexander's kingdom was divided into four parts. So in Daniel 8:22, that's what it says. The broken horn and the four horns that arose from its place represent four kingdoms, which will arise from the nation, although not of his power. So as you know, Alexander the Great died very young. Sometimes it's said he died so young because there were no other worlds to conquer. He had conquered everything there was to conquer. And by the age of 32 years old, he had conquered the world and died. And of course, his kingdom could not hold together because Alexander the Great was Alexander the Great. So it gets divided into four different kingdoms. Well, so the Greek Empire, if you look at your sheet, was from 331 to 146 BC. Okay. So now here's where there's the divide. Okay, you know, Daniel could have lived in 600 BC and, knew that Babylon was the empire, of course, because they had defeated, they had conquered Israel and destroyed Jerusalem and destroyed the temple. So that's, Daniel certainly could know that. And then he lived long enough to actually see the downfall of the Babylonian Empire. When Darius the Mede came to power. But how do you explain that he clearly talked about Greece? Okay, so we say, well, because God told him it was Greece. Liberal scholars won't accept the miraculous. They can't accept prophecy, so they say, well, then he had to write it afterwards. You see the difference? Even though, as we saw the last 2 weeks, there is plenty of evidence to lead to the belief that Daniel, the book of Daniel, was written when it says it was written. Okay? Again, go back to the first lesson, and we talked about, you know, the Old Testament recognizing Daniel, the New Testament recognizing Daniel, Jesus recognizing Daniel. Okay? And then last week we saw the clip on archaeology pointing to discoveries. We're going to talk some more on that here shortly. So in this dream, on this statue, you have a head of gold, which is clearly Babylon. You have a chest and arms of silver, which is clearly the Medes and the Persians. Then you have the belly and the thighs made of bronze or brass, which is Greece. What's next? Well, Nebuchadnezzar's dream in verse 33 says, its legs of iron. Its legs of iron. Daniel's interpretation in verse 40, then there will be a fourth kingdom as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron crushes and shatters all things. So like iron that breaks in pieces, it will crush and break all those in pieces. There will be a fourth kingdom as strong as iron, and we believe that is Rome. All right, the Iron Legions, they were called. The Iron Heel of Rome used iron helmets and coats of iron mail. Verse 33, there's two of them, and it's possible, seems likely to me, that the two legs represent the eastern and western divide of Rome. You know, Rome, near the end of its empire, had two conflicting areas of power. So Rome came to power in 146 BC, 146 years before Jesus, at the Battle of Corinth, where they defeated the Greeks. Okay. Now again, all scholars will look at that and say, well, clearly Daniel's talking about Babylon and Persia and Greece and Rome. But again, the issue is, yes, when was he talking about it? We believe that the evidence clearly says he was talking about it 600 years before Jesus. They would say, well, that's impossible. We can't believe in that. We can't believe in prophecy. We can't believe in miracles. So somebody wrote it much later and put Daniel's name on it. So that's the issue. So if there is evidence, sufficient evidence, to show that Daniel lived, the author of the book lived in 600 B.C., then we have to accept that this is prophecy. Okay. Look at Nebuchadnezzar's dream, verse 33. Its feet, partly of iron and partly of clay. So you have these legs of iron, but the problem is the feet are not pure iron. They're part clay, part iron. So as we well know, nothing is any stronger than its base, right? I mean, the foundation. So this statue and these kingdoms, they all passed away. And Rome, although, again, Rome lasts, depending on how you want to date it, you know, some aspects of the Roman Empire lasted for 1,000 years. But it had in it its inherent weakness. Okay. Verse 42, Daniel's interpretation. As the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong and some of it will be brittle. And in that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery. So these are lesser kingdoms. They are related to the Roman Empire, but they're not nearly as strong as the Roman Empire. Now, if you mark the downfall of Rome at 476 AD, starting in 476 476 AD, from that date to now, would be the lesser empires. Okay, and as I said last week, after Rome, you have among others. All right, I'm not saying this is exhaustive, but you have the Holy Roman Empire, you have Napoleon's Empire, you have the British Empire, you have the Third Reich, which was trying to be Rome, right? You have the USSR, and yes, you have the United States. What they all share in common is they're part iron, part clay, and they all did or will come to pass. They will not last everlasting. They have or will fall. But there's one more kingdom here, okay? Nebuchadnezzar's dream, verse 34. You continued, okay, so he saw this statue, and again, you know, it's gold and silver and bronze and iron, although it starts to mix with clay. Clay represents, you know, we're made of clay, humanity. These are the divided nations, lesser empires. So what happens? Verse 34, you continued looking. So the dream didn't end. You continued looking until a stone was cut out without hands. So what's that mean? This is not of human origin. All these other ones were, right? So you have, for Babylon, you got Nebuchadnezzar. For Persia, you have Cyrus. For Greece, you have Alexander the Great. For Rome, you have, you know, we think commonly Julius Caesar. which have the Caesars. But there's coming a kingdom that doesn't depend on human leadership. Okay? It's not of human design. It's cut without hands. So what that means is what it says. You continue, verse 34. You continued looking until a stone was cut out without hands, and it struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and crushed them. Well, what's going to happen when you cut the feet out from somebody, right? It's going to crumble. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed all at the same time. It became like chaff from the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them was found. But the stone that struck the statue became a great mountain and filled the earth. So that's the dream. What's Daniel's interpretation? Verse 44. In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. Again, because it's God setting it up, not man. Okay? And that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will itself endure forever. It will endure forever. In those days, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will not be destroyed. Verse 45, inasmuch as you saw that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God has made known to the king which will take place in the future, so the dream is true and its interpretation trustworthy. Now, if I read this correctly, now on the graphic, it shows it striking, you know, that weak spot. Since we talked about Greece, you know, the Achilles heel, right? The Achilles heel of this statue is the feet, which are made of iron and clay. But if I read this correctly, that's not really what you're seeing on the screen there. I'm trying to break the habit of pointing to that screen. I'm sorry. I got a note up here. Don't point at back screen. Okay. So what you're seeing on the screen shows that this stone, uncut by human hands, is shattering the feet. And then you would think of it kind of like collapsing, like those cool videos of when they implode those buildings or stadiums, right? They kind of fall in on themselves. I don't think that's what it says. Verse 45, inasmuch as you saw that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future. It seems to me that it really just obliterates it all at one time. Right? They all got crushed at the same time. I might be wrong, but that's what it seems. So the question is, well, what is this stone not cut with human hands? Well, it's divine, and of course, we believe it's represented by Jesus. It's Christ. Okay? And we saw last week, I think it was in Isaiah, where God's coming kingdom is likened to a mountain. So this stone becomes a mountain, right? So it represents the kingdom of God. And it's everlasting. It's not tainted by clay. It's not tainted by humanity. It's all God's doing. And God will establish his kingdom forever. All right, so as I will reiterate one last time, what we in higher criticism, as it's called, really just unbelief, what we share in common is that this is what the kingdoms were. What we don't share in common is, when was this written? So we can, again, continue to follow the evidence and come to a conclusion. Now, again, there's always faith is not the absence of doubt, right? Faith is believing in spite of your doubts. So if there's enough here for us to put our faith in, again, does that mean there's you remove 100% of the doubt? I don't think that's what faith is. If there's no doubt, you don't need faith, right? So if there's enough evidence, but I also back up and reiterate that modern archaeology and finding these things, it was a fairly recent event. I mean, we're talking about, 1880s, give or take, when archaeology really became into its own. So that meant for 1800 years, the church believed Daniel without having to have archaeology. See what I'm saying? And as I said before, the amazing thing is every time there's an archaeological find, it confirms the Bible, doesn't contradict it. Now, one of the things that the film last Sunday that we showed for Sunday school talked about the Cyrus cylinder. The Cyrus cylinder. Okay. The Cyrus cylinder dates from the 6th century B.C. And the cylinder, now this is from Wikipedia, okay, so, but at least they admit this. It dates from 6th century B.C. The cylinder's text has traditionally been seen by biblical scholars as corroborative evidence of Cyrus' policy of the repatriation of the Jewish people following their Babylon captivity. Okay, so this cylinder is talking about the fact that Cyrus allowed the Jews in captivity to return. Now that by itself doesn't bear on Daniel's date per se, but it's the things that it touches on that is important. One of those is Belshazzar. Now, again, if you go to Daniel 5, eventually the Babylonian Empire became ruled by Belshazzar, which I think is the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, but there's some discussion about that. But the fact is that Belshazzar was formerly only found in the Bible. So there was no corroborating evidence. So scholars could and did question his that he was an historical figure, since he couldn't be documented anywhere else. Now, he's mentioned 8 times in Daniel, chapters 5, 7, and 8, but nowhere else in the Bible. But lo and behold, in 1854, 4 cuneiform cylinders with inscriptions to King Nabonidus of Babylon were found in Ur, in the foundation of a ziggurat, and lo and behold, they contained a mention of Belshazzar, who was Nabonidus' eldest son. So up until 1854, scholars would say, well, this Belshazzar didn't exist. We've never heard of him. We can't find him anywhere else. This is a sign that it's a forgery because whoever wrote it just made his name up to tell us this story about, the handwriting on the wall, right? Until they discover these cylinders who mentioned, which they clearly know the date of these cylinders, okay, who mentions Belshazzar. Now, you would think a reasonable person would look at that and say, well, that's pretty conclusive, right? But again, they don't want to acknowledge that. So Nabonidus followed Nebuchadnezzar, which was known to history, but this Belshazzar was not known in history. Nabonidus, by the way, is not mentioned in the book of Daniel or anywhere in the Bible. But nevertheless, he was the last king of Babylon before it was conquered by Cyrus the Great and the Persians. All right, here's some other odds and ends that give validity to... if you did not watch last week's video, I sent a link out. I would encourage you to watch that, okay? You know, in Daniel chapter 4, we'll see, you know, that Nebuchadnezzar went crazy. Now, it was God, but Nebuchadnezzar ended up eating grass like an ox, and didn't cut his hair until it became as long as eagle's feathers, and his nails were like bird claws. Daniel 4:33. Immediately the word concerning Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled, and he was driven away from mankind and began eating grass like cattle, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven, which we think means he did not sleep inside. He stayed out until his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. Now, oddly enough, doctors and psychiatrists have identified an odd malady called boanthropy, that likely describes Nebuchadnezzar's bizarre condition. On the website Online Psychology, there's an article, 15 Scariest Mental Disorders of All Time. And they mention this disorder where those with it are often found in fields with cows, walking on all fours, chewing grass, as if they were a member of the herd. Okay. They believe it was a mental disorder, whatever. But my point here is, you would read that story and say, well, that's, you know, that you can't believe that. The guy was acting like a cow. But yet, psychiatry has found that there is a disorder that makes people do that. Now, of course, we believe God did that. So, but nevertheless, God's punishment for his pride was that. Another story that was mocked was the fiery furnace that we're going to talk about in the next hour. But again, evidence has been found that in that time frame there was a kiln that they used. Where there was at the bottom, they could extract the lime that they were fusing. And then evidence was discovered. The Fiery Furnace, the Book of Daniel, and the Ancient Near East from the American Oriental Society provides examples of execution by burning in Mesopotamia and Egypt. These historically verified examples overcome the usual knee-jerk skepticism, objecting to such things, they never happened, or happened so rarely, they cast doubt on Daniel's story. So they have found archaeological evidence that these kilns that were for a metallurgical purpose were used as punishment. So it is believable that Nebuchadnezzar would throw the three Hebrew children in it. Okay. Same with the Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel was brought, Daniel 6:16, and cast into the den of lions. The British Museum has an article entitled "Lion Hunting: The Sport of Kings." It stated that the Assyrian king, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, but he was 800 almost 900 years before Jesus, was an avid hunter of lions from his chariot. But this was not conventional hunting in the wild. It was a stage event within the game parks of the city. Public spectacles comparable to the Roman arena games. Lions, accordingly, were kept in cages in order for the king to engage in these hunts. So they would cage him up, let him go. He would hunt them. They have archaeological proof showing a lion hunting scene from 750 BC. The Persians also followed this practice. So again, it fits the historical evidence that they actually did keep lions. I mean, why are you keeping a lion? Why is there a lion's den? Because they would like to hunt them. The kings would hunt them. So yes, we can believe Daniel was thrown into a lion's den. Yes, we can believe Nebuchadnezzar kept lions on hand. wherever they were stored up, put Daniel in there. Yes, we can believe that there was a furnace big enough that you could throw three men in it to kill them. Yes, we can look and see that there was a king named Belshazzar, even though till 1858 or whatever, he was never heard of except in the book of Daniel. Again, and my point here is, even if Daniel was written in 165, how would he know the name Belshazzar? You see what I'm saying? If Belshazzar was lost to history from 600 years before Jesus, and somebody forged a book in Daniel's name around 165 BC, how did he know Belshazzar? Because nobody heard of him until the 1850s. You see my point? Now again, I understand it all comes down to belief, right? If you don't want to believe, then you're not going to believe. But if you sincerely are looking for truth and willing to objectively observe the evidence, then there's case for belief. And again, Nebuchadnezzar's statue, which liberal and conservative scholars agree, clearly talks about the four world kingdoms. If there's other evidence that says it was written in 600 BC, then you have to believe that God is a God of prophecy. All right, you're dismissed.